whole of the country is at risk from liver fluke this year, because it was such a wet year last year. A lot of sheep farms will have had issues with liver fluke in the past. It is important, especially where the sheep are still outside. We've had a very mild winter. You know, grass growth has been quite good. That's also good for the parasites and for the little mud snail. They're actively picking up and have been actively picking up infection over the winter and the grazing season. So look, if we're treating sheep that are outside, continuously grazing, continuously picking up infection for liver fluke, it's very important that we use a product that is effective against immature fluke, not the products that are only effective against the mature fluke, you know?
Hello, I'm Kieran Lynch and welcome to Ovicast, the Chagas Sheep Podcast. Each episode, we'll bring you latest insights, advice and technical updates for the sheep industry. This week's episode, we're joined by sheep specialist Michael Gosling to discuss some timely advice for hill flocks in the run-up to lambing. Michael discusses some key areas to focus on this spring, highlighting how yoke condition is a challenge. We discuss the basics of nutrition, some of the feeding strategies that might be implied, and we finish up discussing some of the health areas that require attention in the lead-up to lambing. We hear first from Michael.
Look, I suppose a lot of hill flocks are a good bit away, but I suppose close enough as well for it to start getting serious in terms of looking out for the yoes, I suppose. Look, at the issue, I suppose, that we're seeing is yoes were a little bit thinner last year going to the ram. I think we're seeing that across the board where we're monitoring. Anecdotally, I think the scans are up a little bit, like, so maybe yoes did quite well while they were with the ram. But I suppose, look, at the thin yoes are still thin, and what we're seeing on the Better Farm program is that, you know, the flocks that had a higher percentage of tin yoes, that the number of tin yoes generally increases as they get closer to lambing down. And that's a challenge, because yoes that lose a lot of body condition in late pregnancy or are thin starting out and, you know, aren't able to put it on in mid-pregnancy, yoes won't put on body condition in late pregnancy in general. And no matter what you do with those yoes after lambing down, they're not able to milk. Whatever feed they get, they put into body condition. Yoes generally need body condition to mobilize in early lactation to be able to milk to their full potential and drive on that lamb growth rate. And if they're thin, they can't do that. So it's a compromise. I suppose they compromise the lamb performance. So yeah. I suppose that's one of the big things, Kieran, I suppose, people to watch out for is those thin yoes.
Mike, like, I suppose you just put that in context. Most of them flocks are kind of 4 to 5 weeks out at this stage, maybe a bit more from the start of lambing, depending on where they are in the country. Look, there's going to be some variation in it. Some of them will have scanned the thin yoes there. Like, there's still time to do a little bit of intervention there in terms of what we're feeding them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose you mentioned it there. You know, a lot of them have scanned, and hopefully, if you never scanned yoes before, this year is the year to scan yoes. And it's not so much to identify the singles and the twins. You know, that's what we're generally talking about in the hill yoes. Most of the yoes will have singles. There'll be some handful of twins or couples, as people call them, I suppose. It's to pick out the dries. You know, no point in feeding dry yoes, especially if there's a high percentage of them there. We've seen some flocks there with, you know, 25, even 30%. Maybe if there was a ram went wrong or something like that, of the yoes dry. No point in hammering feed into them at the price at which it's at when there's nothing going to come out of them. So if you never scanned yoes, I suppose, this year, it's about identifying the empties. Scan them, identify the empties, pull them off, and, you know, concentrate the feed then on the ones that are in lamb. And I suppose it's not too late insofar as that we can prevent yoes from losing more body condition in the run-up to lambing. So there's two things. There's a thin yoe, and fair enough, there probably isn't an awful lot we can do with her in terms of getting her to put on a lot of condition, but we certainly can stop her from losing more condition. And that's, I suppose, where the game is at this stage for most people. It's going through the yoes. If you've scanned the yoes, and you have thin yoes in particular, if you have twin-bearing yoes that are thin, they need, you know, intervention and significant amounts of feed to stop them from disimproving further. You know, and I think that's where people should be concentrating now at this stage.
So if we're at that end of it, and look, some will have introduced feed at this stage, maybe to the twin yoes or brought them down, maybe practically, what can we do feeding-wise in the hill flock?
Yeah, so like I suppose, look at the hill flocks are a very variable group of farms, because you have varying degrees of green land, I suppose, to manage the yoes on. So like we would see hill flocks that have a huge amount of green ground, you know, And, you know, even some flocks that possibly could keep the ewes down most of the year, they have so much green ground. And then you have the exact opposite of that. You have flocks where they have virtually no green ground, you know, virtually very little, and all the bit of green ground is needed, will be needed just for ewes at lambing time, and to keep them going as long as they can before they have to bang them back up onto the hill. So, look, I suppose it depends on where people are at. Ideally, and I mean, this is, look, where people have scanned maybe in February, some of the hill flocks there, you know, they'll have kept the thin ewes and the twin ewes down. And that'd be the optimum thing. And then it's really about feeding them at that stage then, and what we're going to feed them and how we're going to feed them. And in particular, I suppose as well, Kieran, we probably need to mention the organic farms that are out there. A lot of farmers gone organic in the hill areas, and an awful lot of very poor quality organic rations out there for big money, huge money, and very poor ingredient structures in them. So it's don't just buy what's available in the local co-op shop, you know, or the local merchant, because it's handy and it comes in a bag and it's 900 euros a ton. Have a look at the ingredients, and if it doesn't stack up, you know, there are cheaper, really good quality cereal based rations out there being made in Ireland by farmers, by organic tillage farmers, probably selling for somewhere between 650 and 700, 750 a ton. Now, that's generally in bulk. But there are people, I'd say, that are bagging that as well, you know, and it's a much, much, much superior ration. So I suppose, look at, in terms of feeding them, Kieran, I suppose there's two things. If they're coming down and there's grass, they're fine, and supplemented with a bit of meal. And ideally, that concentrate feed should contain mostly cereals, and the protein source should be mostly coming from soybean meal. If they're going into a shed, you know, and in some cases hill sheep, in particular the twins, might be coming in and being housed for a period of time, then it's hay or silage or haylage, and concentrates. And look at the ingredients of the concentrate there are important. Having access to the forage, you know, whether it's inside or outside, making sure that the ewes can get to the forage. You know, sometimes we see sheep and they've nosed it all into the middle of a round feeder and it's like a kebab inside the kebab shop. They can't get at it. Or you know, at a barrier situation, they can't get at it. They've pushed it out. So having access to it as well is very important. You know, and I suppose the challenge outside, trying to keep it clean, keep those bell feeders or round feeders moved, like, because they get very messy around them, and that dirt and stuff reduces intake and, you know, soils a lot of the forage and that type of thing. Like, so that's, I suppose, for people who are in a position to bring them down and to manage them below, I suppose that's what we're talking about, trying to manage the forage to maximize intake. So that means access and keeping it clean, and trying to have a good ration. So a ration that is predominantly cereal based. So what we'll be talking about generally there is barley, maize, wheat, oats. The pulps are quite good as well, beet pulp and citrus pulp. Things like distillers and soybean have high energy as well, and soybean would be the product of choice there in terms of driving bee stings and colostrum quality. Like, and that's very important, I suppose, when you're lambing outside, because it's very important that the colostrum quality is there and that the lambs get a good suck, you know, because farmers won't be around there to be dipping navels and doing things like that when the ewes are lambing outside, you know. So very important that the colostrum is good.
Mike, just maybe for those at the singles that maybe rougher ground or aren't brought in terms of providing some supplement to them in the couple of weeks leading into lambing, what do they need and how would we go about doing that?
Yeah, lots of people out there, Kieran, that are feeding sheep on kind of lower hill ground or parks or, you know, rough ground at the bottom of the hill. Or even maybe people feeding them out on the hill even. And look, at I suppose there's a number of options there. If you can feed them in trucks, obviously, then your standard note or ration is the cheapest solution. And again, moving those trucks and keeping clean around them is quite important. If you can feed in trucks, like, you know, then something like a cob would be useful in terms of if you're feeding it on the ground. They'd probably end up picking up most of those. If you're feeding your standard kind of 6 mil nut, Quite a few of them will get trampled into the ground during the wet conditions, and there'll be significant losses there. And, you know, anyone that ever feeds sheep with a snacker like that loose on the ground, look back and you'll see an awful lot of crows when the sheep are gone, and those lads aren't there for nothing. A farmer said to me one time in Westport, he said, you know, them boys aren't there for nothing. And he's right. You know, the reason why they're there is because there's a lot of ration buried inside in the ground and they're digging it out. Then there's the option of the buckets. Kieran, so there's a number of different feed buckets out there. Again, there's organic feed buckets and there's conventional feed buckets. Important if you're buying feed buckets and if you're an organic farmer, that you make sure that those buckets are approved by your approval body. Okay, so that whichever body that you're affiliated to, that the buckets are approved by them, and generally that's down to the molasses and the source of the energy of their soy in them. Sometimes the soy has to be non-GM and the molasses has to come from non-GM sugar cane or sugar beet. So important that you check that out. We don't want to run into trouble with a compliance issue and be paying back money. The buckets, I suppose, Kieran, while they are convenient, they're obviously very limited in the amount that the sheep are going to eat. So you're probably talking about fractions, like, you know, kind of, you know, 50, 100, 150, 200 grams a day at very most. So we're not going to get big quantities in there. But I suppose what they do in particularly if they have energy and protein in them, Kieran, is that they improve the digestibility of the forage. So if the sheep are out there eating rough grasses, generally, what's limiting in that situation would be energy and protein for the bugs to break down those grasses and to digest them for the sheep. And if you put extra energy and protein into the rumen, you know, the bugs are able to multiply better and break it down better, and the sheep get more from not only just from what they're getting purely out of the bucket, but also they get more from the forage that they're eating. I suppose the downside of the bucket is that it's generally 3 to 4 times the price, I suppose, or 3 times the price anyway, of the ration of an ordinary concentrate feed. So you are paying significantly for the convenience associated with it. But for some farmers, I suppose, look, it's possibly the only option, in particular where maybe it's a big trek up to the hill and they're not getting up there every day and they put out some of these buckets and the sheep will lick from them. Look, at the big challenge, I suppose, that we do see with those leak buckets as well, is you have wildlife interfering with them possibly, and the other side of it as well is they could be reservoirs for spreading diseases like OPA, so wheelbarrow's disease or Yaksite, you know, and we're seeing more and more of that in sheep. So that's a kind of a sheep going down with an incurable pneumonia, pining away and dying, and their lungs are filled with fluid, and if they're leaking buckets, you know, they're invariably drooling into those and they're infecting any other sheep that come to the bucket. So look, for flocks that know that they have OPA, you know, those buckets are probably not a great idea, like, you know.
Sounds as well. Look, if I brought you back to the start of that, probably the one key thing we do need to pay more attention, I brought this up several times this year on the podcast, but condition is challenging this year, Mike. You know, it's been a risky season for fluke and other things. Given the fact we're still 5 weeks out, there is just time to make a go in, handle that flock again, make sure your treatment's up to date prior to lambing. Like, getting them problems sorted at this stage is going to reduce a lot of the headaches we're going to see in April.
Yeah, so body condition is one, I suppose, and you've touched on the other things. Then there's, you know, it's probably time for a lot of the flocks to be vaccinating. We're getting ready for vaccinating for Clostridial, and in addition, I suppose, then look, liver fluke. If we look at the liver fluke forecast, you know, the whole of the country is at risk from liver fluke this year because it was such a wet year last year. So look at flocks where liver fluke is prevalent, and look at on sheep farms. A lot of sheep farms will have had issues with liver fluke in the past. It is important, especially where the sheep are still outside. We've had a very mild winter. You know, grass growth has been quite good. That's also good for the parasites and for the little mud snail. And, you know, they're actively picking up and have been actively picking up infection over the winter and the grazing season. So look at, if we're treating sheep that are outside, continuously grazing, continuously picking up infection for liver fluke, it's very important that we use a product that is effective against immature fluke, not the products that are only effective against the mature fluke, you know. And the reason for that is that it takes fluke about 3 months to mature. So if you use a product like albendazole-based product or an oxyclazonide-based product, they're not going to kill any fluke that the sheep have picked up in the last 3 months. They're only killing what the fluke the sheep picked up before that. So really, we'd be talking about your clazantil-based products. Those are your, like the likes of your flucivers and your salentils and those type of products. Your rifoxonide-based products, your ridiflukes and ranide and a few of those. Some of these are in combination drenches. Again, we wouldn't really be advocating the use of a wormer and flucicide for ewes, you know, but maybe for lambs, you could be using those. Your triclobendazole, so those are your all Fesnix or Tribex or Endoflukes, those type of products. The new version of Trodox as well, the nitroxanil-based product, I think it's called Fesinox. That's also a product that's effective against the immature fluke. So they're really where we should be aiming if we're going treating ewes for fluke, if we feel that fluke is something that is prevalent on the farm this year. So yeah, I suppose they're the couple of health issues. The fluke. The vaccination for disease, body condition, as you said, Kieran, is the really big thing. That's the big proxy that people really should be paying more attention to when managing those thinner ewes. And then look at lastly, and not probably a big problem for sheep coming down off the hill, but certainly a problem maybe for some of the sheep that are down the lowland, lameness. Lameness is a huge issue on sheep farms, and lame sheep will not thrive. They can't fight for feed. They're losing weight. Get on top of the lameness. You know, for a lot of people, you know, if you have ewes that are very lame, you're talking about an injection with an antibiotic and you need to talk to your vet about that. It's about identifying what's causing the problem. Foot bedding them sheep is not going to work if they can't put their foot in the ground. Foot bedding is really only effective, I suppose, if you get in there early when the first couple of sheep are starting to show lameness. But very often at this stage, we're seeing sheep where, you know, a significant number of sheep are lame on the farm. And at that stage, it's about talking to the vet about what needs to happen there to get on top of that before we get closer to lambing.
And put that in context when they start being brought together for feeding and maybe in more confined areas, that's going to spread quicker too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, one lame sheep today is probably 3 or 4 lame sheep in a week's time. And in 3 or 4 weeks' time, it's 30 or 40 lame sheep. And you know, if you treat that one lame sheep today, well, hopefully you'll avoid, you know, that situation. And it's much easier to keep on top of that then if the numbers are low, like, you know.
Michael, good having you on today. Look, thanks for that update.
No bother.
We'll leave it there for this week's episode. Some timely advice from Michael there, particularly paying attention to those health issues, looking at condition. It's an issue right across the country. So I think it's just something that needs to be addressed and something we need to work on for the rest of the year. That's it for me for this episode. For updates from the Sheep Programme, keep an eye on our Twitter page at Jogger Sheep. I'm Kieran Lynch. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us for more episodes.